news. That's Norton.com/news for 25% off.
No more NFL than the next guy.
Hear Peter King on ESPN 1320.
His weekly Football Morning in America columns are a must-read for Sirius fans, and he's a must-listen for NorCal. Hear Peter King, Tuesdays with Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on ESPN 1320. NorCal's new habit, Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on ESPN 1320.
Ratto and Kolsky.
Joining us on the road to Miami, we're very happy to welcome in John Clayton. He hosts a radio show up the road, 710 ESPN Seattle. Of course, Schooled with a Professor podcast. Always great. John Clayton here with Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Professor, thank you as always. Great to have you on today. I'd like to begin with a player who I think you're probably the most familiar with, and that's Richard Sherman. His comeback has been spectacular. Did you think it was going to look anything like this?
I thought that, coming off the Achilles this year, he would be better. And, of course, I mean, even last year, fighting through the lingering effects of the Achilles injury, I mean, they didn't throw on him. And that's been his history. And I know Darrell Revis, a buddy from Aliquippa, PA, doesn't seem to agree with that. But, no, I think that what you're seeing is, the Hall of Fame in him coming back. And I think that the smart plays that he has, the fact that his footwork is so good, and he's got just such a knack for studying the game. I'm not surprised at all because, again, he has that level and he's now back at that level.
Given all of that, does the Chiefs team speed still present the toughest challenge to him that maybe we've seen?
Maybe not necessarily to him, but I think to the secondary, there's no question about it because, in that cover one, cover three type of defense, that speed, particularly the little quick routes and all that stuff, could cause some problems. And now what it comes down to is Patrick Mahomes and these receivers finding holes, not on the side of Richard Sherman, but kind of in front of him, as far as, cutting and then cutting toward the middle. So really, I mean, so much of this is going to be how the safeties do, how Mosley does on the other side, because again, I mean, for the most part, you're not going to have very many passes thrown on Richard Sherman, but you could have a lot of passes thrown at the other three guys and four guys when you talk nickel in the secondary.
Is there a sense that either team has to do things significantly differently in any area than they normally do, or is this strength versus strength?
No, it's strength versus strength, but I think the things that have to be done, I mean, the Chiefs have to find a way to run the ball a little bit more just to get some balance. And, of course, in San Francisco, they have to kind of redo what they did down in New Orleans because I think this could be a very high-scoring type of game. I mean, the one thing that we see from Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and that coaching staff, they do a great job of adjusting as the game goes on. And so because of that, they may get off to a slow start. They have in a lot of games this year, but Mahomes then finds a way to start attacking the defense and getting the score up to 30 points. And now what it comes down to is that, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo has shown that he can put a lot of points on the board, but now the adjustment for him is he's got to come back and make sure he can do that if Mahomes starts getting hot, which you would assume he probably will be.
John Clayton here on 95.7 The Game. The slow start the Packers got off to is something that Matt LaFleur is lamenting today in Green Bay, saying he doesn't understand why his team showed up so lifeless. I think that the 49ers have a little bit to do with that. How did you see that one coming in the NFC Championship game at all?
Not the way that it did. I mean, I thought it was going to be a closer game, but I figured San Francisco was going to win because, again, they just have the ability to run the ball, and the Packers don't have the great ability to stop the run. But I think that the big thing was is that, what you have to give credit to was Kyle Shanahan and just basically saying, hey, wait a second. These guys are not adjusting to our running plays whatsoever. And you can see even from today's press conference, Matt LaFleur isn't sure he's keeping Mike Pettine as a defensive coordinator. So I think that pressure now, they just kept on doing it. And it's like, hey, you're going to make it easy for us. We're just going to run the football like that. And, of course, you would think that you make an adjustment, but then the problem that Pettine and them have, they tend to like to get a little light in defense, trying to have a nickel dime packages, only have one linebacker on the field, and that's something you can run on, and that's what happened. They just got run over.
If that's the thing that I keep getting back to is that, this game is going to be determined almost by two coaches who look at offense in significantly different ways. And in a weird way, the old guy is the one who's playing the modern game, and the young guy is the one who's playing the game from years ago. In what ways is that too simplistic an analysis?
No, I think it's very accurate because, I mean, you can see that as a second-generation coach, Kyle Shanahan has brought back and enhanced a lot of the things that his dad did, Mike Shanahan, when he was at Denver Broncos, and basically took an offense last week that looked like it was in the 70s and early 80s. I mean, I couldn't tell if that was you know, what you're seeing from John Riggins or what you're seeing from Larry Zonka. But that's the way that they were able to call the plays. And again, you know, Shanahan's the best run play caller in football. But I think what you can also see in Andy Reid, he's now the most up-to-date older coach as far as getting RPOs, getting the college game out there, and being able to execute it with Patrick Mahomes. And so I think what you have is, I mean, two great offensive minds, two of the best in the league working at it. And then what ultimately may come down to, who's the better quarterback? And right now, that edge would probably go to the Chiefs and to Patrick Mahomes.
This Niner team caught a lot of people by surprise early, and I think that led to a delay in people accepting that they were more than just a nice story. When did this team, in your eyes, become a legitimate contender?
I think the legitimate contender came in the New Orleans game for me, because you know, you had looked at the schedule and they had had a pretty easy schedule, and you know, sure, they were blowing teams out where other teams were having an easy schedule and not blowing the same teams out. But you know, once you saw the New Orleans game, you go, that kind of put them over the top, because they had the confidence of going on the road. Jimmy Garoppolo then was able to get into a shootout with Drew Brees and win that shootout, and then you know, make the key stops at the end of the game to be able to do it. That's the game to me that said, this team's for real.
John Clayton here on 95.7 The Game, of course, Schooled with a Professor podcast, available where all your podcast needs are found. What's got a better chance to happen this NFL offseason, John? Tom Brady ends up in Vegas as quarterback of the Raiders, or somebody pushes Joe Burrows into the Bellagio fountain after he gets drafted by the Bengals to show him what life's going to be like in the NFL?
Yeah, I think probably, you know, maybe Brady to Vegas. I think that could be a little bit more of one that could happen. But, you know, because that's the thing with Burrow. I know his dad, because there was a lot of rumblings out last week that, you know, his dad did not want him to go to Cincinnati, even though he's a Northern Ohio guy. I mean, he grew up in Athens, Ohio, kind of right in the middle of the drive between Cincinnati and Cleveland. Then he came out on a Montreal radio station and said, oh, no, that's not the case. I don't mind him going to Cincinnati. But you still kind of wonder, is like, does he really want to go to Cincinnati? I know, like, right now he's all set to be, because the draft is going to be in Vegas, and I guess he can, you know, jump in the water. But of course, I guess, you know, knowing it's a Bengal team that's coming off a 2-14 season, I would make sure I'd have some snorkels on. He might drown.
I mean, is there really a chance of that actually happening? The way that you know, you know, the Manning said, San Diego, don't draft Eli. He's not coming. He's not interested. You're going to be wasting a pick. I mean, could that happen in 2020? Would that be allowed?
It wouldn't be allowed, but it wouldn't change the equation. I mean, the Bengals have the pick, and, you know, knowing how the Brown family is, particularly Mike Brown, I mean, one, he's not going to trade it. That's one thing that you know for sure. I mean, here was a team desperate, you know, winning. It was winless in the trade deadline. It wouldn't trade anybody. I mean, so it's like, okay. And so this team is pretty basic in how it handles its business. And so I don't necessarily, I mean, if he wants to hold out, if he wants to do something else, it's just going to be, they'll just have to wait for him. You know, and that could be can you imagine the contention that's going to be in the locker room next year? Because, you know, figuring it's going to be the Brown family, they're going to put the franchise tag on AJ Green. So he's probably going to hold out. Then you got Burrow trying to, I guess, see if he wants to go to Cincinnati or not. And in the end, he's going to have to settle for it, because I don't think you can make a move on the Brown family that they're going to be against. And they, if they want him, which I think they do, they're just going to draft him.
Oh, dysfunctional front offices, always worth the price of admission. The Niners used to have one of the biggest dysfunctional coaching staff front office relationships going. Now it looks like Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch are just, you know, peas in a pod.
Yeah, it really does. And I think, I mean, and what's great is that they seem to accept each other's decisions. Like, you know that Kyle probably preferred to wait until free agency and get Kirk Cousins. And yet, you know, you got John Lynch having the opportunity to pick up Jimmy Garoppolo for a second round pick. And that worked so well. And, you know, Kirk Cousins hasn't won a playoff game. And, you know, right now you got Jimmy Garoppolo with his one win. That worked out well. But the big thing is that John Cano helped get the talent and Kyle's able to coach it. And I think the remarkable thing is now the confidence that Kyle has. And I don't know if it's a matter that he learned so much in that New England game from the Super Bowl, knowing that he made a couple bad calls down the stretch. But, I mean, he's so on top of things right now, and everything's kind of funneling. I guess his coaching staff's helping him out. I mean, right now he's at the top of his game.
One of the things that has been brought up, at least around here, is the similarities between this 49er team and the one that Bill Walsh took in 1979 and turned into a Super Bowl team 3 years later. And the thing that I think always separated Walsh from all the other coaches of the era was that he was also a very good player personnel guy. Do you see that in Shanahan as well, or are we sort of overstating things that aren't maybe fully in evidence yet?
Well, I mean, I think what it comes down to is that I don't know his total evaluation process, because certainly not knowing what goes through his mind, but I think you can see there's some similarities. And, you know, I think it's particularly on defense, because, I mean, and maybe even offense too, to a certain degree, although they're still sorting out the wide receiver position. But what was the one thing that Bill made sure he did, along with getting a great quarterback? I mean, he got help on the defensive line. And so you can see the transition on the 49ers this past year. You know, they take Nick Bosa, they trade for Dee Ford, and the next thing you know, all that a team that could only create 8 turnovers on defense is now formidable on defense. And that's one thing, stopping the run, pass rushers, those type of things. And he seemed to have a great eye for that, and he had great coaches to be able to work with and get those guys to come through. You know, certainly you can see that they did a great job at right tackle, figuring out somebody on the other side of Joe Staley with Mike McGlinchey out there, and they've been able to patch up the middle of the offensive line. But no, I think that, you know, the combination of Lynch and Shanahan just seems to be very good at picking players and making the team better. I mean, you go from 2-14 to the Super Bowl, you don't see that.
Reading about Patrick Mahomes over the last few days, the moderate consensus seems to be you're in trouble no matter what, but if you want to try to slow him down, maybe the only way is tight man coverage and zero blitzes. That is certainly not what the Niners defense excels at. Do you think they may change a little bit of what they do to try to do more of the things that have disrupted Mahomes? Or is the strategy just, we do what we do well, hopefully it works?
No, if you try to make a total adjustment like that, it'll be a complete disaster. Because, you know, I know I was talking to Logan Ryan last week, and what Logan said in that first meeting against Patrick Mahomes, and remember, Patrick couldn't run. He's coming off a dislocated bone in his knee, and he couldn't run whatsoever. But he threw for 446 yards, and they were in man coverage for 50 plays in that game. And so it's a matter that you have to mix it up. Because, I mean, if you put him in zone, I mean, he made that but one run in a zone, he can do that. And if you play man, he can also. So I think right now, it's do the best job you can on defense and mix it up, but don't necessarily change what you do, because if you do, he's going to just destroy you.
No one's got a better pulse on the Seahawks than you do. What stings more, Richard Sherman in the Super Bowl with the Niners or Frank Clark in the Super Bowl with the Chiefs?
Mm-hmm. Probably Frank Clark with the Chiefs, because, you know, he showed, particularly in the second half of the season, what they were missing. Now, again, they made a great trade in getting Jadeveon Clowney for a third-round pick and 2 backups. And, you know, he's not the sack guy, but he's one of the top 7 disruptors. What they needed was the sacks, because what you saw was that they only had 28 sacks this year. And, you know, here down the stretch, I mean, in the first playoff game, I mean, what Clark had 3 sacks and all that. I mean, they needed what was the 13 sacks that they got from Frank Clark, you know, in a year ago, but they didn't get it this year, and they paid a price for it. And again, you can appreciate this down in the Bay Area. I mean, you look at what happened last year. I mean, for San Francisco, they couldn't create turnovers, and they had problems in the secondary. And why was it? They couldn't rush the quarterback. I mean, what, the best pass rusher was Cassius Marsh, who was really not considered a great pass rusher. Now, you see this year, only 28 sacks. They didn't get the interceptions that you would think, you know, particularly the cornerbacks, and the cornerbacks had trouble. So I think that the importance of trying to get that pass rush together, you know, came out for the 49ers, and now is a missing element here in Seattle.
Is there anything that you think will be a dramatic surprise on game day, tactically, for either team? Or is because I sort of think that, unlike, you know, unlike most Super Bowls, these are two teams that are absolutely convinced that they're better. And because there doesn't seem to be, there seem to be such contrasting styles that there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence to suggest otherwise. So is either team likely to pull out something genuinely unique to them? Or is this just going to be, we do what we do better than you do what you do?
Now, I think it would come more from the defensive side of Kansas City and what Steve Spagnuolo can do. Because, I mean, you can see he's such an upgrade from Bob Sutton, who no longer was there. He was, you know, let go at the end of the last season. And Spagnuolo is still figuring out what he has and what he can do with his defensive players. And now with that extra week, I'm just going to be curious to see, you know, what he can try to do to slow down the run. Because you saw it in the game on Sunday. They made adjustments as the game went on. And after, you know, giving up pretty good yards to Derrick Henry in the first half, they pretty well shut him down totally in the second half. And so I think he's the X element of this game, you know, the one that probably can come up with something a little bit. Because, you know, Robert Saleh, I think, still wants to stay with the base defense that's worked for him all year. Maybe they'll do a little bit more wide nine and get pressure on the quarterback and stuff like that. But I think the X element right now and the one that can come up with a surprise is Steve Spagnuolo on defense.
John, always appreciate your time and your knowledge. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
John Clayton, here on 95.7 The Game, The Professor.